positions that are in that department. And we're going to continue to work together to see that those things come together if there were some problems over there. And you know, there's a lot of similarities between business and government. And you operate with a budget, you have some goals and some ideas that you want to have happen. And you, in private business, you want to make a bottom line profit. And in government, you're working with a lot of boards and commissions and career people in government, been there a long time. And so one of the big differences is you don't have the same control in government that you have in your private business. You're working with marketing people, sales people, department heads. In government, you're working with boards and commissions, department heads, and career people. And you don't have the same latitude to get your point across as you might as if you were the president of a company. And so there are some differences between government and business, and one is the personnel. We've got maybe 17,000 people working for state government, and the most part are real good people, dedicated to what they're doing, and want to continue on in the system, and don't mind changes, want to go ahead. There's a new government been elected, and you're going to charge on, and you're going to do these things, get this done, and they know what the goals are. But there are some that don't. They don't understand that and resist change. And therein lies a problem. The problem has been created over a lot longer years, I suppose, than we're going to be here. But there is a problem there. And so business is different than government. You're working with a bureaucracy. You're working with bureaucrats within a bureaucracy. Nothing derogatory about that. You're working with people that have a narrow, rigid routine and have some power or authority over a certain area of government, and that's their domain. And if the commissioners or the cabinet people or people higher up levels don't work with those people in their proper fashion to let them be a part of what's going on, and bring them along in the same fashion that I want to see things done, or make them a part of the team, make them part of a team effort, sometimes they resist and things don't happen right, and this in the mechanism slows down. And when you come from the private sector, you want to get something done in 2 years instead of taking six. Therein lies a problem. And so I think it's how we. And I think we all learn from some of these things, too. I know I'm learning. You need to work from within the system to bring everybody along so that they feel a part of the family, a part of the team effort, so you can have your goals and get things done better for the people, save money, be more responsive to the people's needs. And those are some of the things that I've been thinking about in this process. I look back at the Department Administration in the Fairbanks case, telling people you're going to move July 1, here's a schematic, here's where the outlets are going to be, and get ready to move. And they probably know better, they probably have a better idea of where they ought to be sitting in that building than the department administration does. And so we need to get their input. So it works not just the department heads, it goes right down to the person sitting there doing the grunt work. And we can get that sort of cooperation and ideas across, I think we'll all be better for it.
Governor, I appreciate that, and I think you are really thinking about all the things that need to be done. I found the state employees to be a real dedicated group of folks out there, but I think they feel that they're going to be around when we politicians are gone.
Oh, sure. They work for four or five governors, maybe 10, you know,
right.
This is over.
And I think there is a sense out there that maybe they were left out and nobody listened. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I promise not to take more than a few minutes. Frankly, one thing that has concerned me about the whole framework here is that I'm glad we have a governor who wants the bureaucracy to move and isn't content to just spend time on the job, but wants to. Let me just philosophize a second Governor Sheffield, because when I began working in Alaska politics, it was with Bob Bartlett and Ernest Greening, and they were both Democrats and they were friends, but one of the things I observed in Washington was that staff members working for Bob Bartlett, and I was one of them, used to sometimes run to him and say, "Senator, do you know what they're doing? They're going to put in a bill with ideas." And that was a way staff members had of proving themselves loyal to the boss. I'm sure the same thing happened in the other office, and it created sometimes a sense of rivalry or overprotectionism. And I think I was interested in this because of your comment about how staff can be more protective than they're working for. Sometimes in government, when we're in controversy, I find that the spouses of people in politics hold part longer than the politician does, because we're off to other issues and other alliances and the next case, and our wives or husbands may be nursing some animosity over what happened yesterday, and we're on to some other matter. I think you're familiar with that, aren't you? So I just, for whatever it's worth, I hope that from all of this, perhaps there will be less sense of protectiveness and or self-discipline about that in the future from the people who serve. The second thing, Mr. Chairman, is that, and I have to say this in response to Senator Sturt, I read the materials very differently, and I think that this is not to say the Senator Reed is wrong and mine is right, but I think it suggests that we better go back and look at these laws and regulations and figure out what we do intend. And I'll just make a statement that I look at AS0925110, is the open records law, as creating a presumption that all books, records, papers, files, accounts, writings, and transactions of all agencies and departments are public records and are open to inspection by the public during regular office hours, unless otherwise provided. So if you just read that far, that would certainly include a draft RFP. Then in your, and I think the Senator is correct, and I appreciate her bringing the materials to us, then you go to the regulations that apply to your office, and the underlined material says all agency records are disclosable to the public unless non-disclosure is authorized by a valid Alaska or federal statute or regulation, and I think we established that there may not be one applicable at least to your office or by a privilege exemption or principle recognized by the courts or by an agency protective order authorized by law. There was no agency protective order. And we get down to a really esoteric issue as to whether, in this case, the draft RFP should not have been given because of the principle recognized by the courts, what that means. And I just suggest this to my colleagues because there's been a big issue made of this, and it came up in the grand jury report. I think we all probably agree that it is not impeachable to, if there was an error made or a mistake made, to err on the side of such an obscure and esoteric point. I think the legislature needs and make sure that the future governor is misled by any ambiguity in the laws and regulations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Catula.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Senator Coghill and I have been close friends for many years, occasionally political allies in given subjects, and I was sitting here, and it reminds me that he was chief of staff for several weeks for another man who is in essentially the industry you've been in. He was very busy, very much in a hurry to get things done, and I remember the headlines of the day concerning the mansion, Wickersham, state police uniforms. All these, he just went about getting going and getting done. And it, I just well remember that period of time. So I went to another chief of staff. And I said, really, what do you draw on this? And this is essentially his comment. He said, in the parliamentary system, your governor, your prime minister is very much educated in the state political system. In the system of getting things done before he becomes the prime minister or the governor, if you will. But in our system, it's incumbent with essentially people relatively new to political office that come out of the business sector or other sectors of governments, relatively important, and this is my point, my purpose, that the senior civil servants, and I said the system breaks down if they don't, but the senior civil servants must come in from time to time and discuss what they think may be anti-regulatory or non-legal postures that a new governor, business-oriented governor, or his administration are taking, something they know that is not correct. They must come in and tell that governor, and they must take it upon themselves to tell that governor, communicate with them that this isn't right. They must be willing to quit if he continues on in that method. And the governor himself, and this is tough, but the government should not take too much exception to somebody that may come in with a serious position and inform a governor relatively new to the political system that this is the way it must be done. This is a little bit different from owning your own business and pursuing it. And it's so interesting because it led me to one other thing, and then I'll stop. I was walking down the street when a businessman stopped me, and he said, I was the only one, and happens to be in your hotel chain, interestingly enough, but he just said, I was the only one that was invited to participate in setting up a particular shop in one of the buildings here. And he said, I think I'm the best at it. So he says, it's not unique to get things done that this should take place, and et cetera. Again, I think that you are a businessman, you're in a hurry to get things done, and if somebody in the civil service doesn't think it's right, he ought to come in and tell you. Go to Superior, they ought to come in and mention it, and help to educate a governor so that he can run the business of state in the fashion that's been prescribed. And I just want to make that statement from experiences I've had.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor, appreciate the opportunity to hear your side of the story as well. And I know it's been a long 2 weeks, and particularly for some of us there that are in other areas. Excuse me. I have a question that was based on, it's based on a comment that was made within the early discussions of the hearing process. And it was basically a comment that was made that there were other state employees that were disturbed with things that were happening or going on, or pressure that was being felt by them from someone else, most likely other than from the agency that they were with. And I'm using the term pressure pretty much as in the context of what these hearings were about. And usually when we find a situation similar to this that's out of the ordinary, this seed of doubt is planted, and once the process goes on, we end up with a flowering garden of similar situations. And within the time period then of the this hearing process, and prior to that, to the grand jury investigations, has anybody come forth to you through your office there with similar problems, such as what we're being confronted with here?
I don't think so, Mr. Senator, not that I know of.
Do you know if anybody has gone through to the Department of Law expressing concerns that undue pressure was being applied to them?
No one has told me about it. I visited the Department of Law about 10 days ago, met all the people along with the Attorney General. Nobody's expressed any concerns to me.
In other words, we don't have the flowering garden that would normally come from a seed.
I don't think so. Everybody up there seems to be happy. They all seem to be very, very, very supportive of the Attorney General. They seem to be very supportive of me. And so all of that in the past is somewhat of a mystery to me, which I'm still thinking about.
Thank you.
Senator. That concludes the Senate portion of the questioning. So we'll turn then again to Senate Chief Counsel, Mr. Sam Dash.
Governor Sheffield, excuse me. Yesterday evening, I asked you some questions about the memorandum. Take some water. about your, the memorandum of, I think, December 14, in which you tell John Shively about Lenny Arsenal's indicating his ownership interest. And I used that memorandum at that time to suggest that maybe that was the time that you learned that the Borough Building was moving out. And you answered that I was wrong, and that there was an impression left in my questions that that memorandum did in fact establish that that's when you learned. After your testimony, we sought to determine when the Borough Building was moving out in terms of any public announcement. Senator Bennett was good enough to assist us in that, and I think the record should be clear in fairness to you that the Borough actually adopted a resolution in July of 1983, certainly previous to the November 14 memo of, to Lisa Rudd, approving the proposal of the new building and also indicating that they were vacating. And I want to put that on the record, that the evidence would show that you would have an opportunity to have learned about the Borough building, Borough moving out of that building much prior to your memorandum of December 14th, and certainly prior to the November 14 memorandum.
I don't think, Mr. Dash, I ever doubted that. If I did, I misunderstood your question.
No, your testimony clearly made that clear, and I wanted to clear the record that any inference I may have drawn from that memorandum and left it stand is no longer an accurate inference, and I think the evidence shows that your answer is supported by the evidence. Also, I think I also would like to clarify the record on a matter brought up by Senator Sackett. He stated that I misstated the grand jury testimony of Lisa Rudd in my question to you when I asked you a question as to whether you remember a meeting with Lisa Rudd in which, in my paraphrasing that grand jury testimony, I said she told you that she had been getting the impression that you wanted the Borough Building to be the location. During my question, I did not at all intend to quote from the grand jury testimony, but I paraphrased a number of pages. It is true, as Senator Sackett read from the grand jury testimony at page 533, that Lisa Rudd at that time testified, but I said, I'm getting the impression that you would like to have this work go to Jeff Cook. But as if you just turn the pages on page 534, the question was raised, do you recall anything else said? Was mention made of the building in question in any way? And from the context, it's clear that you're speaking about the Jeff Cook building, the one he's acting as real estate agent for. And he said, she said, oh, yes, the building was being talked about. Then the question was made, asked, do you recall how it was referred to? Answer, I feel really handicapped because I've never seen this building. I don't know very much about its previous uses and so on. But no, I don't recall how it was referred to. Early on, it was referred to as the building that the city and borough was moving out of. Question, you've heard it referred to as the borough building at times. Yeah, yeah. Then later down, her answer, well, I said that it may end up that way. That is the thing we will do. But it was necessary to go through a process of acquisition for acquisition of office space. And that process included a space study, which we were then, as I recall, in the midst of. At that time, there was a lot of pressure to speed up the space study or trash it entirely and just get on with it with the space study. And finally, on page 536, the question, well, 535, the bottom line, the question, and this pressure also is coming from the governor's office. Answer, yes, yes. Question from Mr. Shively. Answer, yes, from the governor also. I don't recall receiving pressure directly from the governor on that. And so at that time, during the conversation, what I was trying to do was preserve the space study as a viable study and to allow the completion of it in an orderly way so that it would be really useful to the state. And so I said, you know, we may end up in that building, but we have to have a process, and it has to justify the use of that building and has to be a process the same as such we use for other acquisitions. And I'm just reading that in the record, Governor Sheffield, to indicate that my question, paraphrasing all those pages, reflect that Lisa Rudd was at least testifying that she, in a meeting with you, said that she was getting the impression that the Borough Building was your preference for the consolidation. Now, also, Governor Sheffield, I think it's your testimony today that that impression really was correct. I think you have testified, have you not, this afternoon, that that was your preference for the location of the barrel building, of the consolidation?
Yes.
Governor, you were asked a question as to about Mr. Hickey and Attorney General Gorsuch briefing you just either prior to the impaneling of the grand jury, or I think, as you've indicated, they'd already done it. And I think your recollection was that it was a general briefing, just what the grand jury was going to do, why they wanted the grand jury to look into this. And is it your recollection that Mr. Hickey did not actually give you the details of the evidence? For instance, the details that they had, that Mr. Shively was a target, and that they had evidence that he had used pressure to change the RFP?
Mr. Dash, I don't think they gave me any of the details at all. I don't think I really understood the details until my statement was taken, I think, the next day, and only to the extent of the things that they asked.
Mr. Hickey has informed us that they did give you the details. Is it your testimony either that you don't recall that or that he may be wrong?
Well, I'm not saying that he's wrong. I don't recall, Mr. Dash, all the conversation. They weren't there very long, so they couldn't have told me much.
Now, in your testimony this afternoon, you told the committee that you recall reading a March 1985 story about the dissatisfaction of the staff moving into the new building. Could you tell us when and how you got notice of that story?
Well, it was probably, Mr. Dash, Trudy Kane, who runs our Fairbanks office, either called or sent a communique to my office stating the problem. And I might have read it in the paper, I'm not sure, but somehow I knew that, and I think Trudy Kane and I talked at least at one point on it. And it seemed to kind of grow over a short period of time. The problem kind of started out kind of small and got kind of big, as I recall, in a very short period of time.
Well, my question is, how is it that you can recall that story, and specifically, and not recall the Stan Jones story on April 2, which I suggest should have been more important to you because it involved the Fifth Avenue lease and also a consolidation project, which was a priority for you?
Well, you know, I don't recall that story in the Fairbanks News Miner. There might have been other stories about in the Anchorage papers or a Juneau paper that might have been there that might have alerted me, but I think I was out of town before the Fairbanks News Miner would have got the Juneau for me to read it in the first place. And
I guess the question is, would, even if you were out of town when it came out, would it have been brought to your attention in the course of your staff trying to alert you to stories that may be of your interest?
Not necessarily so.
Now, I think it was your testimony this afternoon that you had actually stated your preference for a downtown location for the consolidation project and for the Fifth Avenue Center, and that was known by John Shively. And I think you said that, therefore, you wouldn't be surprised if John Shively, knowing that, and that was your policy, might have gone ahead on his own and sought to implement that policy with the Department of Administration. Now, that being so, would it be unlikely, Governor Sheffield, that if the owners of that building had learned that the RFP actually permitted the selection of a building outside the downtown location, wouldn't it be likely that they would want to alert you to that, bring that news to you, and send Lenny Arsenault to talk to you about it?
It's highly probable, yes.
And actually, wouldn't it be likely that that meeting on October 2 was exactly that type of a meeting?
It could have been.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dash.
I have no further questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Chairman? Senator Sackett?
Based upon your recommendations, I don't intend to debate the subject with your staff member right now. However, on the floor, I would bring up the subject matter regarding the testimony.
Senator Coghill, we have something to be ready into the record.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the article, Governor's Office, submitted by Senator Sturgiluski as to the rules and regulations be submitted for the record.
No objection, so ordered. When we adjourn today, we'll convene again tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. here, and hear summation arguments by Tennessee Council Sam Dash and the Governor's Council John Conway and Phil Lacavera. Hopefully the Senate Rules Committee will then meet tomorrow afternoon to begin our deliberations. Governor, thank you very much. We'll excuse you as a witness. I don't believe we're going to be calling on you anymore.
I'll be downstairs.
Senator Ray?
I don't have anything to say. You just piqued my interest when you said that the Senate Rules Committee will meet. Is that without the benefit of our council?
Senator Ray, you're always welcome in the Senate Rules Committee meeting.
I see.
Rules Committee...